We have not spoken to Rav Daron Peretz since the funeral of his dear son, Daniel. Rav Daron Peretz, of course, in addition to being a great rabbi, educator, and author, he's the executive chairman of World Mizrahi. I have told you, my precious audience, for years, what kind of amazing job he has done in that position, and what he has done since he has taken over essentially the Mizrahi movement based in Jerusalem. And as many of you know, Rav Daron and his family suffered this terrible loss. Now, in retrospect, we know that his son was confirmed to have been killed in this terrible tragedy of October the 7th, Shemini Atzeres Simchas Torah. And the funeral with the remains of Rav Daron described at the funeral took place just a couple of weeks ago. Rav Daron Peretz, it's an honor to welcome you back to JM in the AM.
Thank you, Nochem. It's always a privilege to be with you, pity under these circumstances, but it's always been amazing to have you as a friend and to be on the network. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. Great to have you as a friend. And, of course, our condolences, and you know I represent thousands of people when I say that, our condolences to your family. The day of the funeral was something. In addition to it being an open sky funeral, and by that I mean that the skies were certainly crying tremendous tears that day. You don't normally see a storm like that in Jerusalem. But in addition to the weather, it must have been an absolutely humbling experience for your family to see the reaction of so many in Israel and around the world to the news regarding your son. What was that day like for you?
The unfortunate reality of the fact that the fate of our son was from the word go, tied up with the fate of in many ways the state of Israel and Jewish people. He was one of 250 confirmed hostages, first missing, then hostage. On the day, as we know, 1,200 people were killed on that day, 300 soldiers, including 80 officers and 900 civilians. And then, of course, the ongoing war to try and both bring back the hostages and then to obviously defeat the enemy, that they should never be able to do something like that again. So there's no doubt that our personal pain and tragedy from the word go has been part of so much suffering in the Jewish people, not to mention, so many households in Israel having children and parents and sometimes grandparents and people fighting for months on end. So I think for me the first feeling was feeling part of Klal Yisrael when we say HaMakom Minachem Otcha B'toch Shaar Avlei Tzion Yerushalayim. We felt amongst Avlei Tzion Yerushalayim. Firstly, where we were in Har Herzl, where so many holy people have fell from before the state of Israel. Some of the graves there are, there's a grave close by of those whose the place of their burial is unknown. And just walking in there, just to feel that you are bound up with the bond of the life of the Jewish people. And then, as you said, the sort of overwhelming experience of being at a military ceremony, which with all of the, the machinations of, the statehood and that's official ceremony. And then just so many people from all walks of life, so many of the hostage families, some of the soldier hostage families, so many of the people that we've met along the way in Israel, and so many people who were there from around the world. And it really was... it was very, I don't know what the right word is. It was, is humbling, meaning, I don't know what the word is. It's to feel that what we have experienced and experienced then was part of something so much bigger than oneself. And yes, yeah. At the end of the day, nothing changes the fact that you are over the open grave of your son, and nothing can, ameliorate that particular pain of loss. Of course, we still want to bring his body back, and there's a lot to be done then. But one couldn't certainly at that moment, and to a large extent during the Shiva, where so many people around, was to distinguish between the deep personal pain and the fact that it was in so many levels part of, not to mention that he fought and fell with members of his tank defending, so many people. It's hard to to distinguish between the personal and the collective. I'll just tell you maybe just one story is that during the Shiva, he fought for over two and a quarter hours defending the base and kibbutz of Nachal Oz in his tank very, very bravely. And two families from Nachal Oz kibbutz came to us during the Shiva. And young families are really in tears, and they said to my wife, and now one went to my wife, another one came to me, and they said, you know, we read about what your son's tank did, and we now understand why relatively so few people were taken captive from our hostage from our kibbutz. I think five, and I think maybe 14 were killed from the kibbutz, but down the road, further from the border, Kfar Aza suffered horrific, horrific losses. And they said they know that our son, Daniel, and his tank crew and what they did in that day for those critical 2 hours where the first two waves were coming in played a decisive role in what happened. And
I don't mean to trivialize it, but I think I saw someone write an estimate of how many people he may have saved that day.
Yeah, it's hard to know. It's really hard to know. It's hard to know because it's just hard to know because they definitely saved many, many people from the base of Nachal Oz and the kibbutz of Nachal Oz, and you just never know. You never know that every terrorist that you managed to stop and kill,
what could
they have done?
So yeah, God knows what they could have done. Yeah. Rav Daron, unfortunately, you have a lot of colleagues in Israel. I mean, so many families and parents have suffered the loss of a child. As members of the IDF, defending the state, the land, the people, the nation of Israel. But the other group is rarer, and that's the group of hostage parents. That's not nearly as common a group. Aside from the obvious that all of us who think that have got, who know that if God forbid we were in the same situation, we wouldn't be able to sleep at night. Besides those obvious things, what could you tell us about what's going through the minds, hearts, and lives of those parents and family members who are still waiting for their beloved ones to be freed from the brutal, terrorizing hand of the enemy?
Mm-hmm. You know, to try and put into words the sense of angst and fear and anguish of those 163 days, I think it would be best to be expressed by my wife, after the initial shock of, hearing that he had been declared dead from October 7th, Simchat Torah, and then, of course, the funeral and the very, very busy, Shiva. On the Shabbos of the Shabbat morning of the Shiva, I said to my wife, we woke up in the morning, I said, Shel, how are you feeling? How are you feeling? And what she said, really surprised me. She said, Doron, in what world do we live that knowing that your son is dead has brought a sense of relief? Meaning, it turns out, she said, that I can deal with my loss. It's very, very painful. We're just at the beginning of it, but it's my pain. Begins and ends with my sense of loss. But I know that he never suffered. I know that he's not suffering. And I know that he won't suffer. She said, I no longer have to worry about him. There's no fear. There's no angst. There's no torment. And she said those 163 days were just, the difficult thing about it is there's no rest because you just don't know what is happening to your child. And, you're trying to do everything you can to bring them back. You don't know if they're in a tunnel. You don't know what they're eating. My wife would often say she couldn't shower because she would cry. Is he warm? He doesn't like the cold, Daniel. And he's a very particular eater. And you could barely swallow without crying of is he eating or not eating? So that fear, trembling, angst, and anxiety, which is really a concern for your child. She said to me at the moment that I understood that and we know the chief rabbi of the army told us that he did not suffer. He was either very badly wounded in the beginning or killed, initially in the end of the very difficult tank battle. Mm-hmm. But the knowledge that the anguish of torment and worry and affliction and suffering and torture has ended, And therefore, he was always in a good place. He is in a good place. He didn't suffer. The fact that she said, I no longer have to worry about him, and I know that he's in a good place, has given a sense of relief. So I think that just gives you a window into the this incredible, I mean, nobody should have to bury a child. Nobody should have to go through that. But in the unfortunate reality of life, it happens. But it doesn't really happen that you have a child held by Hamas, and for 163 days of this horrific enemy, you have no idea what is going on with him. So it's a very difficult, experience to explain. There are over 30, maybe 35 bodies that we know held by Hamas, and it's very different. Bringing your son or your child to a Kever Israel is different from having to the knowledge that your son or your child is hopefully alive, and what are they going through. So it's
Rav Daron, you've been privately with me and publicly with this audience pretty open about this whole situation. I'm with the whole world, frankly, which is, believe me, was appreciated the whole time. People, you know, wanted information so they could provide comfort and let you know that we were thinking of you constantly and praying for your son. Did you know that it was going in this direction before the army had confirmed it? Was the comfort, quote unquote, that you and your wife, you know, eventually experienced? Because as you said, you'd rather be like this than, God forbid, you know, find out that he's been, held for months by the enemy in terrible circumstances. Were you aware that it was going to go in this direction, or was this, you know, a complete revelation based on intelligence and based on army sources that, that made this news known to you essentially when everyone else found out?
Yeah. So just two things I want to say, comment on something that you said. I want to say it's not that we in any way would have preferred this result to him being alive.
Yeah. Right, I put it the wrong way. I apologize. Sorry, yeah, I put it the wrong way. Right?
No problem. It's a subtle thing. It was just say the way I would explain it is the knowledge that our son had passed away, which obviously was horrific, and we have the rest of our life to mourn for it. But the knowledge that he had not suffered, is not suffering, and will not suffer, brought a sense of relief from the angst. And that's obviously not the result we would have wanted, but there's definitely a sense of relief for that. Right. Look, we were informed on the Sunday night of the fact that he had passed away, and the funeral was the next day. To say that it was a total surprise and we thought that he was definitely alive 163 days, no. We had no clear evidence that he was not alive. We did know that he had been injured, which meant, and we were never sure if that injury was a significant injury, because the amount of blood and the quantity of blood did not suggest that the injury was fatal, but we didn't know. And tank commander who's shot is his head is out the tank, and even though the amount of blood and what was in the blood did not suggest a fatal wound injury, but that's only the blood we found. We didn't know what else there was. So was there a suspicion, a concern that he may not have been alive? Yes. We didn't have any sign of life for 163 days. That was also concerning. There are a number of other soldiers which did have signs of life, which have signs of life, including one of the members of his tank. So the fact that there was not a sign of life and an injury and, as the time wore on, no sign of life was very concerning. The week before, Itai Chen, who was taken at a similar time to him, was declared, one of his soldiers was declared dead based on footage. And even though that footage had no bearing on Daniel, because there was nothing in that footage about Daniel, it was another, I don't want to say nail in the coffin, but it was another very concerning piece of information that he has a kid who had no sign of injury and yet was injured. So that is very concerning, very concerning. So
understood.
That was difficult.
Rav Daron, what does it do now for you in terms of the big picture of the war? I mean, obviously a terrible loss, and like I said, unfortunately, you have a lot of associates, a lot of families in Israel that can relate to what your family is going through. But at the same time, you know, those of us who believe in the destiny of the Jewish people and our claim to the land of Israel and believe in a strong nationhood going forward. You know, we want to see a total victory, and we want to see this war end a certain way. What is your perspective of this big picture after having gone through all this?
Look, we're still in the middle of it. It's hard to know, you know. We don't know if this is going to expand into Hezbollah and into the Lebanon. We don't know how it's going to expand with Iran. It is so volatile, the situation. You know, we still have 133 hostages. We still have Hamas many battalions in Rafah, and therefore there's the war's nowhere near over, and that's only. That's only one, one front, you know. So it's hard to know. You're in the middle of a story, and it's hard to know how the story pans out. I think the one thing we do know, just maybe two thoughts that I want to share. Thought number one is that although the three the designated goals of the war have not yet been achieved, number one, to bring back all of the hostages, number two, to dismantle Hamas, that such a danger should not be, and number three, that all the over 100,000 civilians which have been displaced should move back to their homes. None of those three have been achieved in their entirety. But I think one thing has been achieved. I do not believe in Hamas's wildest dreams. They believe that the sense of resilience, determination, fighting spirit of the Jewish people would be as swift and as powerful as it is. They did not believe in this. I know from security information that Israeli mothers would be prepared for their sons to go into tunnels and piers. They thought they would be too scared to do that. And yet the immediate response of this young generation and the fighting spirit now for 6 months, and the incredible self-sacrifice and heroism and courage displayed just in the most incredible way by this generation, I think has been, for me, the big revelation for us and for our enemies.
Wow.
That yes, you think Israel is a cobweb. That's what Hassan Nasrallah, Machshem of Hezbollah, keeps saying, that Israel is just a cobweb, and it's transient, and with one fell swoop you can destroy it. And they've got a lot of patience. But I think what they found in this day is not a weak, divided society. Yes, there's division. Yes, there's challenge. But when we need to step up, boy, oh boy, is this fighting spirit and this sense of heroism there. So the ends of those three aims of the war still need to be achieved. But what has been achieved, I think, is a tremendous sense of deterrence, the understanding that we as a people are incredibly resilient. And yes, we are humane, and yes, we distinguish between combatants and between civilians like no other nation, despite whatever certain elements of the world say. And yes, we are concerned about humanitarian effort more than they are concerned about their own people. And yes, we have the Western, yes, but there is a steel iron spirit, which is at the foundation of our desire not only to survive and to thrive. And we will not hesitate to fight, not only fight back, but to do everything for the surviving and thriving of the Jewish people.
Wow.
And to me, that is the biggest lesson that our generation has learned and that our enemies have learned, however it pans out. And it will pan out okay. Jewish history always pans out okay. We don't know how long it'll take, and we don't know what the prices are. And we know that the big picture story of Jewish history is that it'll be okay. But how long it'll take and what the price will be, I don't know. But what I do know and believe, we have seen that our generation is worthy of the challenges. And even though we have paid a terrible price, and 1,400 other families have paid a terrible price, because it's 1,500 people have passed away, but some are multiple members of families. It's right. Over 1,400 families. But I think with that horrific pain, I think what it's revealed is that just like so many died in the War of Independence, yet it did not dampen the spirit of what we needed to do. So too today, I think we have an incredible generation, and whatever the big picture holds, and then ultimately it will be good, we've revealed who we are to our enemies and who we are to ourselves.
Wow. I mean, to hear you say that after everything you've been through is amazing. And frankly, to hear you say that with the position that you hold and with what you represent to the Mizrahi movement is so incredible and heartening. And And wow, a tremendous observation, and one that gives, as you just described, the Jewish people great hope for the future of Israel, the Jewish people, and the Jewish nation. Rav Daron, finally, I must say, and many people in this audience, I'm sure, heard it because so many people were watching from around the world. I mean, the eulogy for your son was really remarkable. And obviously, you don't need my endorsement, but I must point out the final few minutes where, because blood was so important, which you described why, to this whole process, the final few minutes, your discussion about blood in Jewish tradition and then blood and wine and how the two, share messages, especially with the upcoming holiday of Pesach. I don't know, if you yourself or someone else influence the direction you took with that entire presentation at the end of the eulogy, but I thought it was so poignant and so key for Jewish people around the world to hear. Could you just expound on it a drop and tell us about what we should be thinking about in that regard as we sit down next Monday night to Leil HaSeder?
So I will say that that idea was something I sort of thought of a few weeks ago, and I'll tell you what spurred it on. And also it appears in our, just part of the eulogy, but it appears in our HaMizrahi magazine, which is coming out for Pesach.
Right.
And there the actual theme of the magazine is B'damai Chayi, through your blood you shall live. And I will say what alerted me to that is, often a thought on Pesach to think, when we want to show the spilling of blood, we take the wine and we spill it, right? That's what we actually do in Pesach.
Right.
And then also there's a theme of blood in the Seder where we say, we actually say this pasuk from Yechezkel where we say, where the prophet says that Hashem saw, so to speak, meat boseset b'damayich, wallowing in our blood. Va'omar lach b'damayich hayim. We say twice, in your blood you will live, in your blood you will live. And that appears in the Haggadah. And the sages famously say that it's referring to two types of blood, the blood of Brit Milah that we had that night that we left Mitzrayim, and the blood of the Korban Pesach. And I was at a Brit Milah recently, and the same festival of Pesach is the whole Seder is defined by the four cups of wine, Arba Lashonot Geula. So this blood and wine being similar sort of an idea has been in my head for a while. But then happened, I was at as a rabbi, I'm often present at Brit Milah. I've often wondered to myself, here you have this child who's just had a circumcision, crying, blood all over, and at the same time, with the Mohel's putting wine into the child's mouth and drinking the wine, and the father's drinking the wine, the Mohel's drinking the wine, the Sundex, and you've got this machazeh, this vision of blood and wine together, and it just made me think that that's perhaps the reason why Chazal was so makpid on red wine. Red wine is the, and it's also the theme of the, of Purim, all the su'udot that happen in Purim.
Right.
And here we have our Purim su'uda. So this thought in my head has been sort of playing around for a long time. And I just felt that perhaps that's the message of Judaism. No more, so much blood has been spilt in our, so much blood has been spilt in Jewish life, yet no people like us celebrates on a cup of wine and Kiddush, and Shabbos and Yontif and a Simcha and a wedding and a Brit Milah, that wine is ever present. And I just felt that perhaps the two substances which are the most similar to each other, when it comes to blood, is blood and wine. And perhaps that's the message of B'damayich Chayi, that you will live in your blood, L'chaim. And that's why B'damayich is the blood, and L'chaim is what we say, the Jewish people celebrate life. So it just dawned on me, perhaps, that that's the, in a nutshell, the synopsis of Jewish life. There's a lot of blood, and blood is spilt, but there we convert it into wine, we celebrate, we move on, we bring with us the pain, which doesn't go away, and is always there, and the whole Seder is replete with bitterness and maror and pain and becholdor vador and avadimayinu leparo and the bread of affliction, but it's also got punctuated throughout by wine and by celebration and by the Korban Pesach and the time of life. So it just dawned on me, perhaps, that that dichotomy is the story of Jewish life.
Oh, I thought it was brilliant. I know it'll enhance my Pesach Seder, and I hope people do think during the Pesach Seder about the fact that there is a joyous element with the wine, but B'damaya Chayi goes for the Jewish nation as a whole, as you indicate, and a lot of blood has been spilled. And all I could say is that I hope quickly God avenges the blood of Daniel Peretz and all those who have fallen so far in this terrible war. Our best to you and your family. Whatever.
Thank you so much, Avnachem.
Any comforting message we can transmit, we are transmitting to you, and I look forward, when I'm in Israel next month, please God, to reuniting with you, and I wish you a Chag Kasher V'Sameach.
Thank you so much. Much appreciated, Nachum. Thank you so much. God bless.
The leader of World Mizrahi, of Daron Peretz. We remember his son, Daniel. I have goosebumps, as Rav Daron was talking about the blood and wine. We should think about that at the Leil HaSeder. What a lesson to teach our children and grandchildren. And our condolences, of course, to the Peretz family. Please God, we will speak with Rav Daron again. We're in Jerusalem next month. More coming up, an extended overtime edition of JM in the AM.